For members only, Golf Smarter number 346, published on August 14, 2012, is brought to you by Bonobos, an online men's apparel company who understands that men's pants just don't fit well. Click on their ad at golfsmarter.com or go to bonobos.com, spelled B-O-N-O-B-O-S. If you've never shopped there before, now's a great time because every new customer receives an exclusive 20% discount off your entire purchase when you use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Secret of Scoring with Terry Kaler of our new Short Game Academy.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Terry.
Thank you, Fred. I'm glad to be back and continue to talk about the short game.
Well, put on your slippers, buddy, because it seems like you and I are going to be spending a lot of time in this room together.
I'm ready.
I'm very excited about the questions that are coming in from the audience and you answering them on every Golf Smarter episode. And again, I just want to remind people that if you submit a question to Terry, he is going to answer it, or one of his staff will answer it. But if he uses it on the podcast, you will receive a score 41-61 wedge of your choice, a scoring club of your choice. So make sure that you click on the Short Game Academy button at golfsmarter.com, and we'll get more into that later. But I want to pick up from where we left off on the last episode, and that you were talking about technique in short game and bringing up the names of different tour players. I want to just let you riff on that. I want to pick it up from there.
Okay. Well, you know, we were talking about the LPGA, and I had mentioned the Avion Masters and watching these ladies come in. And I mean, they were throwing darts at the flags. They were hitting it all over the hole. They were making putts from everywhere. And, you know, the LPGA player is not as strong as even the average amateur, much less the tour, male tour counterpart. So what my whole point is that, you know, you listeners out there, you're not going to learn how to hit 330-yard drives like the tour players do. You're not going to learn how to hit 195-yard 5-irons and 6-irons, and you don't want to. But it's not the game you play. You're not teeing it up on these 75, 7600-yard golf courses that these guys are playing. But what you can do is learn a sound, fundamental technique. It's all technique that lets you hit really solid, accurate short iron shots and scoring shots to get the ball close to the hole when you're inside 9-iron range or 8-iron range. And so, you know, you're going to play the golf course. If you think about your round of golf, and I alluded to this in the last interview and episode, if you're playing the right set of tees, you're going to play the golf course from, you know, 5, 6-iron, 7-iron range for half of the approaches, and 1 or 2, 3 approaches at most are going to be, you know, in the long club range, and the bulk and the other approaches are going to be in the under 9-iron range, 9-iron, 8-iron or under. And those are the holes that you should be able to take it to the golf course, whether that is breaking 90 or whether that's shooting par or breaking 80 or getting a career round. If you can learn a good, solid technique for getting the ball on the right trajectory so that it flies the right distance, making solid contact, and hitting the ball on the green and closer to the hole, when you have one of these short clubs in your hand, then your handicap will go down. It's inevitable. It has to go down if you're giving yourself par and birdie putts when you put that 9-iron or less in your hand. It's just crucially important to enjoying the game and shooting better numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. You've mentioned before that you've been playing golf most of your life. Have you ever taken lessons?
No, I've had dozens, hundreds probably. I like to say I don't remember life before golf. I literally, my earliest memory of life is sitting on the ball pocket of my dad's Burton golf bag on a Bag Boy golf cart and being able to hold the handle and my feet not touch the ground. So I don't know how little I was, but that's my earliest memory of life. But my dad was a good amateur player. And I grew up in the 50s in small town Texas, and every little 9-hole course had a golf pro trying to make a living back then. And we had a pro that loved teaching kids. And But mainly we were taught to get out there and just go play. And they didn't mess with our swings much until we were, you know, in our, you know, early teens and getting a little more power. You know, I look at juniors and I kind of get off on this of you know, trying to grind on these 4 and 5, 6 and 8 year olds on techniques and fundamentals. It's like, just let them go have fun. Let them smack the golf ball. I mean, when you're 6 years old, the club can't get too far away from where it's supposed to be anyway. Just let that kid go have fun. I mean, a friend of mine was telling me his 10-year-old daughter, the golf pro, was trying to teach her how to trap the golf ball. Granddaughter. This is a 10-year-old that's just taking up the game, and the golf pro is trying to teach her how to trap an iron shot. It's like, really?
Really?
I mean, I'm not picking on this golf pro, but, you know, let this kid just go smack it and have some fun, and they don't need to be digging divots at that age anyway because they don't have the strength to get the club out of the dirt. Just smack the golf ball and make it go that way. And I think that, you know, I watch the high school kids in our town, and I think they hit too many range balls. They don't play enough golf. And, you know, we were kids. I mean, we slung the bag over our shoulder, and with our 4, 6, 8, 10 clubs, as we, you know, we put more clubs in our bag as we graduated. And I think you put that little kid out there and give him a 3-wood and a 5-iron and a pitch and a wedge and a putter and let them go. And then they can add some other irons as their gaps get a little bigger. But, you know, let them go learn how to make the golf ball do what they want it to do. They'll figure it out. Kids are very resourceful. Just let them go.
Listen, when you and I were kids, we used to go to the school grounds or the park and wait a few minutes, and then all of a sudden you had a pickup game for baseball with full set of teams, right?
It wasn't
Little League where you get, you know, you have to stand in right field for 2 hours so you can get one at bat.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, golf is fun because, you know, I mean, you take the Little League and my golf professional whose son is a very good baseball player and golfer, but he's really drawn to the baseball thing. And you know, he was, you know, talking about what's the appeal of Little League to kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they go out there, the kid's in right field. He may not make a play for 3 games and he gets 3 at bats. It is not the action that keeps them in baseball. So what is it? It's the team aspect. I think they get to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I mean, I'm getting off of our short game thing, but I think golf could take a tip from that and get these kids playing scrambles where they're part of a team and everybody hits every shot and they cheer each other on. And you're glad that you got the best player in the league on your team. And if Susie can't quite hit it as far as everybody else, well then come on, Susie, you can do this. You can do this. And kids cheer each other on. And
yeah.
And but we're talking about the short game. We're trying to talk about your listeners, and probably not a lot of 7-year-olds listening out there. But if there are, you kids just go play golf. Forget the range. Just go play golf and learn.
Yeah, how to right. Play. Listen, there are parents of 7-year-olds, and one of the things that Jeff Mangum and I have talked about is getting. And of course, we're going to be sidetracked here, but getting kids started in golf, just take them to the putting green. It's free, and if you can get them to put it in the hole and fall in love with putting it in the hole, the rest of the game will fall into place. But get that hard part out of the way, and kids can get putting so much better than trying to hit the ball off a tee or off the grass. Get it in the air.
I really think that the game has to be taught, whether you're teaching a 5-year-old or a 45-year-old, the game has to be learned from the hole backwards. Because when you learn how to roll the ball across a green, 6 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, and make it do what you want it to do, everything's happening slow. You get the feel of ball face impact. You get the feel of how the ball propels off of the club head, and you can move from there to chipping and there to pitching. And I really believe if you're going to try to teach somebody to play golf and you're trying to teach them a full swing before you've taught them how to chip, you are spinning your wheels. You cannot learn this game from the tee forward. You've got to learn this game from the hole backward.
Oh, so if you important.
Can learn, this is where the fundamentals are short game, and we're going to talk about the fundamentals today if we ever get around to it. But the fundamentals are that if you're, I mean, take driver's ed. You don't teach a kid to drive by pulling out onto the freeway and say, let's go, man, romp that thing up to 70 and let's get after it. You teach him to drive in a Walmart parking lot. You teach him to how that car handles, how it feels in a turn, how it feels in a braking, how it feels in an acceleration. And that's really the way we need to teach golf. We need to teach you how this feels when you're hitting a little shot that's going to fly 10 yards or that's going to roll 10 feet to start with. And then we're going to teach you how it feels to fly that ball 10 yards. And then we're going to teach you how it feels to fly that ball, you know, 50 yards. And then we're going to teach you how it feels to make a full swing. But if you don't know how to make a golf swing from, you know, hands going back waist high to hands going through waist high, That's exactly what's happening in a full swing. Well, if you can't get it right from waist high to waist high, you've got no chance of getting it right from behind your head to behind your head.
Yeah, right.
And so the beauty of the short game is if you work on your short irons and you work on your wedge play and your scoring club play and your pitches and your chips, the release through impact is exactly like is happening with the driver, but it's happening slower. It's happening that you can learn that. You can feel that because you're moving your hands and your club head through the ball at 15 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour instead of 80 or 90 or 100. You know, it's just like in a car. When you get out on a freeway, things are happening fast. And that car can get away from you in a hurry. Well, the same thing with a driver. That driver can get away from you in a hurry. Little errors at 100 miles an hour become very big errors. But a little error at 15 miles an hour doesn't put anybody in the morgue.
Yeah.
And from the golf is the same way. If you will learn how the club releases through impact, how your body core and the club engage together, how your weight shifts, if you will learn that on these little short shots where it's all happening in slow motion, you can learn it, you can process it, you can act and react, and then you can work to get your speed up. And that's what I'm a big believer, that what is happening at that magic moment of the club a foot before impact to a foot after impact, the same thing happens in a pitch shot that's going 20 yards that happens in a drive that's going 250. Exact same thing is happening through the impact zone. It's the moment of truth, and it's the exact same thing. Learn it in slow motion, your whole game. You will do more for your driving by learning how to hit good nine irons than anything else you can do.
So the challenge would be, and we're going to issue this challenge right now, is the next half dozen times you go to the driving range, leave your driver, your hybrids, and your fairway woods in the car and just take mostly your scoring clubs. Just work on those, and you're going to see a greater impact on your scoring than if you just walked out to the driving range and pulled out your driver immediately.
Well, I think the thing is, and nobody's going to leave their driver in the car, Fred. Come on. This is 2012, and everybody wants to hit it 300. But I'll tell you what.
Not golf smarter listeners.
If you will go out there and spend two-thirds of your practice session working on short pitches and chips and then into short iron shots and then into middle iron shots and finish off that session when your last 10 balls, pull your driver out and smash five or six of them, and then go back and hit a couple of nine iron shots and finish that practice session with a couple of short pitches. You know, one of the things that I always like to tell people, and it's become a pattern of mine when I'm doing it, and there's a difference between a practice session and a pre-round warm-up. When you're going into a pre-round warm-up, you're getting the feel of the ball off the club, you're getting the feel of your tempo, you're getting the feel of what the ball's doing today. You're just getting ready for the first tee. You're not trying to learn anything out there. You're just seeing who came with you today, which swing came along today, and how are you going to hit it. But what I always encourage people to do is, you know, work in your pre-round warm-up, you know, hit a few half wedges, hit a few, you know, three-quarter wedges, hit some short irons, hit a few seven irons, hit a few five irons, hit a couple of hybrids, a couple of fairway woods. You know, beat three or four or five drivers till you get a couple that's like, man, that's where I really want it to be. And then save those four or five golf balls and go back and hit those last four or five balls before you go to the putting green or to the first tee. Hit four or five little pitch shots and chip shots, because in the first or second hole, you're going to have a pitch or chip shot. And you don't want it to be, boy, I don't remember the last time I hit one of these. That's the whole idea of a pre-round warm-up is re-experience all the different kind of shots you might have to hit that day, at least the basics, you know, middle irons, short irons, hybrids, fairway woods, drivers, and some chips and pitches. You know, get the feel of those so they're refreshed in your memory bank. You've hit a million of them, you know how, but refresh that before you go to the tee so you don't get to that first chip shot of the day and go, oh, wow, I don't remember the last time I hit one of these.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah, I just hit a couple of these really solid on the practice green 20 minutes ago, or the practice range.
So, all of a sudden, you have more confidence in it.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, I know. What
confidence. You know how to do it, but yeah. You forget. I mean, it's like bunker play. You have trouble with bunkers. You go into practice bunker, maybe get the pro or friend to take you out. You work on it. You get to where you're really hitting good bunker shots, and then, you know, it's 3 weeks before you get in a bunker, and you go, oh, man, I'm scared of bunkers. Well, the last time you were in one, you were hitting it good. And, you know, I think that's also a good thing, is if you have very little time to warm up, go hit a few bunker shots, because good slow tempo really works in the bunkers, and it will infect into the rest of your game.
And I'll tell you,
nobody swings a golf club too slow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One of the things that I love to practice, you know, especially pre-round, is let me take a swing or two, and not much, just a swing or two, pretending I'm under a tree.
Yep.
Right? Just take the hybrid and not try to take a full swing in it, but just give me 40, 50 yards so that I can get it out of the trees, back onto the fairway, because I still believe you never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot. So just get yourself back in play.
Yes, and that's fun, you know, to go out on the range.
Yeah,
instead
absolutely.
Of just seeing how far you can hit it, I'm going to hit this little, you know, cut 5-iron or this little kind of knockdown 4-iron out from under the trees or this little flop shot, you know, and hit different shots. So anyway, we were going to talk about the fundamentals. There, to me, there's like, you know, the thing that anybody can learn is some basic core fundamentals of what makes for a good short iron technique.
And I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
So let's talk about the fundamentals and what makes a good short iron technique.
So I have a 99%, 95% finished manuscript called The Secrets of Scoring. And in The Secrets of Scoring, what I'm trying to do is break down the core fundamentals of, you know, scoring club technique, those swings you make with your short club. So let's start with this whole thing about power. And I talked about Ben Hogan and his yardages last week. Go out and all your listeners, I always tell people every golfer has 3 yardages with every club. And that's how far you think you hit it, how far you wish you hit it, and how far you really hit it. And, you know, most golfers are, you know, well, I hit a 9-iron 155 one time, so therefore that's my 9-iron range. Well, you know, I talked about Ben Hogan last week about his yardages, and he had 20 yards in reserve with every iron. Now, that was Ben Hogan, and that was then, but I think it would be a good exercise for most golfers is to go out on a hole on the course where that you know, if you can get out there late in the afternoon and hit, you know, go to a place that, you know, hey, this is a textbook 9-iron for me to that green and you know, 140, 128, whatever your number is, go shoot it with your laser to that flag that you think is your textbook 9-iron range and hit 5 9-iron shots and see where they go. See if they're all around that flag or if they're all over the lot. And then take 5 more balls and hit that 9-iron to the front of the green, 10 to 12 yards short of that flag. And just throttle back to hit those next five balls to the front of the green, right on line with the flag, but the front of the green. And you will probably find that those 5 are grouped better than the first 5 you hit. And you will probably find that first 5 you hit, that let's say your 9-iron range is 135, and that's what you think it is, you will probably find that the first 5 you hit are pretty widely scattered and 4 of the 5 of them are not pin high. They're not that far.
Right.
And, you know, it's be realistic, guys, and like I said last week, it doesn't matter how far you hit a 9-iron, but can you hit one that far every time? And if you're a 9-iron, a guy that hits a 9-iron 127 and knows how to hit it 127 will smoke you when your 9-iron goes anywhere from 135 to 145. He will kill you when short range because he knows 127 is my number, and that's a 9-iron. Nobody would give me extra bonus points if I did that with a pitch and wedge. Nobody's going to take away points if I did that with an 8-iron. The fact is I'm here in the middle of the fairway. It's 127 to the flag, and all that matters is do I know how to hit a shot 127 yards every time with reliability? That is the only question. Not what I do it with, but can I do that? I'm 165 from the flag. I'm 112 from the flag. I'm 109, whatever the number is. The only thing that counts is do you have a club and a swing that you can put together that will make the ball go that far reliably and consistently? And that's how golf is played. I mean, Luke Donald is like 185th in driving distance, and he's, you know, just right back and forth number one in the world. Okay, he doesn't hit it as far as those guys, but when he's 152, he knows how to hit it 152. And he's not going to hit it 165 this time and 141 the next time. He doesn't do that. So the way you do that is you simplify and you take away moving parts. And, you know, everybody got enamored with Sergio Garcia and this big lag that he had and whatever. But to me, if your listeners, and I mean, he's endorsed by another company, but go on YouTube and watch video after video after video of Steve Stricker. He's got the most simple swing move. It looks like there's one moving part, and that's his body core. He's not hinging his hands. He's not flopping the club around. He is back and through with his body core. And as you watch these videos of Steve Stricker, watch his relationship between his hands and the front of his sternum. And his club rotates back, and his whole body rotates back in one piece. And when his sternum is facing away from the target, his hands are out in front of him. And when he comes through, his hands are in front of him. And when he rotates through impact and his sternum is facing the target, his hands are out in front of him. And the relationship between his hands and his sternum does not change dramatically. It's a very simple one-piece move. And I will tell you why this is so important. The closer we get, if you think about your posture and your stance in the golf swing, your feet are planted on the ground. So they can't move. They can't move closer and further from the ball. They can't move up and down. They're planted on the ground. So they are the most stable thing in your golf swing. But you can stand in one spot, and you can make your hands go in a six-foot circle. You can put your hands anywhere you want to put them. Right? You following me here?
I'm with you.
So then you move up to your hips. Your hips can rotate back and through. But they can't move very far off of that stable base that you have with your feet, or you will lose your balance. If you go up from your hips to your and I would ask every one of you guys, get out of your chairs and stand up and get in just kind of basic golf posture, bent over a little at the hips, your knees flexed, and put your finger right on your sternum, right on your button on your shirt, and push backwards and then push against your finger forward. You cannot move the center of your body more than a half an inch before you can feel yourself out of balance.
Yep.
So what if you could connect your hands with your sternum consistently? Then you could not move impact more than a half an inch. You couldn't hit one in the hosel. You couldn't hit one out on the toe. You couldn't hit one high or low on the club head, because your sternum cannot move more than a half an inch without you falling out of balance. So if you think about controlling your golf swing from that body core, and you learn to just rotate your body core. And one drill I love is to stand up and get in golf posture and just cross your arms over your chest and put a hand in the front of each shoulder and just rotate to where your sternum faces backward and rotate to where your sternum faces forward and your weight's over your left foot. And you will find you can do that over and over and over without losing your balance. It's a great drill to learn how to rotate your body core. That's a fundamental. If you control the golf swing with your body core, it can't get very far out of whack.
I'm doing that. I'm standing up. My hands are on my shoulders.
Okay, so you can see if you get the feel of this back and through rotation, and you rotate back, and you feel the weight in the inside of your right foot, and you rotate through, and you feel your weight go all the way over onto your left side, where you finish with all your weight on your left side, your sternum facing down the target line, your hands crossed. And you can do that back and forth and groove that, okay? Mm-hmm. Groove that, and now you have a core-driven golf swing. Fundamental number one, you've got to control the golf swing with a body core, okay? Fundamental number two, you have to have a proper grip on the golf club. And you can go read excerpts of Ben Hogan's book, and the grip is not a personal thing. The grip is a sound fundamental. It's just like, you know, some people like to drive the car from the passenger seat. Some people like to drive the car from the back seat. Some people like to drive their car from the roof of the hood. This is not a personal thing. You drive the car from the driver's seat with your hands properly on the wheel. That's the way you drive. And there is one technically sound way to hold a golf club. Now, you can choose the interlock grip or the overlap grip or the full finger grip, not baseball. But the club runs under the pad of the left hand, left heel. The heel of the left hand, and way into the fingers, under the pad at the base of the fingers. 99% of golfers have the club way too much up in the palm of their hands.
Right, the grip, they're just death grip, huh?
Get it in your, well, they're just holding on to it like a ham sandwich, as a guy once said. You know, hold the club in your fingertips, and you cannot hold a golf club too lightly. Your body will not let you hold it so light that it flies out of your hand. And the other fundamental of the grip is the golf swing is a pull motion with for right-handed players. This is a left-sided action. And here was an analogy that I'll tell you. In the golf swing, you have a hinging point at your shoulder. You have a hinging point at your wrist. You should not have a hinging point at your elbow. But you have hinging points in this connection between your body and the club head, correct?
Yep.
So let's call it a rope. Okay, or a chain. It's a chain with three links. The club is a link, your arms are a link, the body's a link. okay? Mm-hmm. If you were trying to hit the club with your right hand, you were pushing a chain. Okay, go push a chain. See how far you can push a chain. You got to pull a chain to make a chain move, right?
Right.
Like pushing a rope. Go out in your yard and get you a 10-foot piece of rope and see how far you can push it. You can't push a rope. You got to pull a rope. And this hinging connection between the club head and your body is a flexible connection. It has to be pulled. And what happens when you pull a rope or a chain? You look behind you and it's dead straight.
Right.
And if you turn, it makes a turn and it's dead straight again. And that's what happens in a golf swing. If you learn how to pull the club through with the muscles of your lead side, your left side for a right-handed player, that club has got to go, and you have a nice relaxed grip on it where it can hinge naturally, that club has got to go, and like that rope, it's got to go pretty much in the same place every time. But if you're trying to hit it with your right hand, if you're trying to dominate the club head with your right hand, which is the natural thing to do, we're all right-handed. We got this little striking implement 3 feet from our hand. We got this little golf ball. We got to make that golf ball move with that striking surface. Guys, that's why people can't break 100 or 90, because you can't do that. And if you want an illustration of that, this is another little illustration. Take your golf club and tape a Sharpie to the end of your golf club. Now take another Sharpie and go over to a wall or a flip chart and sign your name with a Sharpie. And then step away and pick up that golf club with the Sharpie taped to the end and try to sign your name from that 30 inches away that your hand now is from that Sharpie. That 30 inches is an error magnifier, and you'll sign your name that looked like you did when you were 7, because that's an error magnifier.
Huh.
I mean, it's a great illustration of you cannot get the club face on the ball with your right hand. It is physically impossible to do that with any consistency.
Wow.
And those that try the hardest shoot 90s and 100s. Those that are willing to learn how to pull the golf club through impact. I mean, don't get me wrong, guys. It's still a difficult game. But it's difficult enough if you're trying to learn how to do it right. It's just really impossible if you're trying to learn how to do it wrong. I mean, how many people are out there listening, and how many people do you know that have played golf their whole life, 1 and 2 days a week, they practice like crazy, and they're still shooting in the 90s?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
It's
the masses. It's the masses. Why do you think that is? It's not because you don't put in the time.
Right.
It's because you're doing it wrong. You cannot push this rope. You cannot push this chain through impact. You've got to pull it through impact. Second fundamental, it's a left-side-dominated game. Third fundamental, you can't hold the club too lightly. Okay. And another thing that I think has golfers so screwed up, and that is this pounding and pounding and pounding that we've had. You got to accelerate through the ball. You got to accelerate through the ball. You decelerated. Well, most people didn't really decelerate. You just really don't. If you clocked the club head speed at the beginning of the backswing, it would be pretty physically impossible to have more club head speed at the start of the backswing than at impact. What you did is you changed your rate of acceleration. You jumped at it too hard from the backswing. If you have a car moving 4 miles an hour and you give it a little gas and it speeds up to 5, it's still accelerating, correct? It doesn't have to go from 4 to 40 to be acceleration.
Right.
4 to 5 is acceleration. So what this accelerate through the ball, if you go out and watch your friends and watch the average amateur golfer, he's taking a short backswing and he's really jabbing hard at the ball to try to get enough club head speed to make it go. Well, there's not enough swing there to have a nice leisurely acceleration. And so therefore you get these short jabby strokes. But if you will just go out and hit pitch shots, take your gap wedge or your sand wedge, go out and hit little pitch shots and just practice seeing how slow you can really move the golf club and still make the ball go right. It's really pretty amazing. I mean, you can go into essentially slow motion back and slow motion through, and the ball will still come off the club head with some zip. It's pretty amazing, actually. But, get slower with it. One of the things I like to do is I use the analogy of house painting, and playing a golf hole and around a golf is like painting a house. So you have your power tools. The painter has the sprayer, and he comes in, man. He gets the sprayer or the power roller, and he is just laying the paint down on those big wall areas, just laying the paint down. And then the other guy over here is using a 3 to 6 inch trim brush, or cut in brush, and he's cutting in windows and doors. He works slower than that guy. He's the middle iron player. Okay? And then the guy that comes in at the end is the trim guy. And he works with a little 1.5, 2-inch trim brush, little angle trim brush, and he works meticulously slow. And you know what? His work determines whether or not that paint job looks worth a damn or not. It doesn't really matter how good a job the spray guy did or even the cut-in guy, because the trim guy can ruin a round of golf. I mean a house painting job. Okay? So you go hit a decent drive down there. Okay, it got a little bit in the rough, but it really had any trouble. And you got a 6-iron to the green. You hit a 6-iron. You pulled it a little bit, but it's off the left side of the green. It's on the safe side. And then you chunk a chip, skull a chip, 3 putts, and you got a 7. And you go, how the hell did I do that? Because your trim brushes, you were working too fast and not meticulous enough. Your trim brushes are your scoring clubs, and they determine what your round of golf looks like when you're through.
Absolutely fascinating.
Now, thank you, Mr. Furyk, for giving us a prime example of that on Sunday. Jim Furyk chopped up the last hole with his trim brushes. He was not in real trouble after his second shot. He had a bogey to tie, a par to win. I mean, you know, you would, and again, I'm not knocking Jim Furyk. I mean, these are pressure-packed situations. All your self-doubts and your demons and all those things, you know, are right in front of you now. But, you know, he tried to get cute or whatever, and he should have said, you know, anywhere on the green, I'm going to 2-putt for a bogey. I'm going to be in a playoff at worst. I am not going to get cute with this. I am not going to lose golf tournament by trying to get cute. But he did. And you know, that happens to all of us. I mean, how often you guys, all you listeners out there, and, you know, you get a decent drive and a decent second shot, and then you just chop the hole up with your short clubs. I mean, it's just maddening. It's like, you know, okay.
I know it all too
well. I hit a 230-yard drive within 15 yards of where I wanted it, and I can't hit a 30-foot pitch shot within 15 yards of where I want it.
Right.
I mean, really? I mean, think about that. So that's where that practice comes in, the good technique. You know, get your body core in control. Learn how to grip the club lighter. Keep it in your fingers. And one of the secret, I call it the secret fundamentals, because I never read anything about it. When you look at the golf magazines and when you watch golf on TV, when they have a camera angle where you're looking straight at the guy from his target or straight at the target from behind the guy and he's hitting a short club, look at his hand position. Look how close his hands are. His arms are hanging straight in hers, hanging straight from the shoulders down right off of the thighs. They look almost crowded over the ball. But when they rotate back and through, those hands go exactly back through that same position, and the club head goes back through the same position. They make good, crisp contact, and the ball goes where it's supposed to go. There's not a straight line between the left arm and the club head in the golf swing. There's an angle formed there. Because the way you're holding the golf club under the heel pad of your left hand, you can't get the shaft and your arm in a straight line when you're looking from behind. And there's a rotation. The hands are not unhinging through impact. They're rotating. If you're looking at swing sequence photos and you're looking straight on, pay close attention to look at the back of the left hand in the last frame before impact. And the back of the left hand is facing straight to the camera. And the club is pointed straight backwards, maybe even a little upward. Okay, and then a frame or two later, the hand has only moved laterally toward the target about 15 inches, but now the underside of the left wrist is facing toward the camera. So there's been a full 180-degree rotation of that left hand through impact, the release we call it. And when that hand releases that way, look at what happened. The hand moved laterally from 6 or 8 inches behind the ball to 6 or 8 inches in front of the ball. But the club head moved, you know, let's say a 36-inch golf club, or let's take a 40-inch club. The club has moved from 3.5 feet behind the ball to 3.5 feet ahead of the ball. So there's a tremendous magnification of power in that rotational move of the hand through impact. That's why tour players can hit it so far and look like they're not swinging hard at all, because the only thing moving fast is that rotational move of the hand. And that's where they're getting this tremendous magnification of power. It's the proper release, and you can go learn that by hitting pitch shots and rotating and releasing that, because you're doing it in slow motion. And once you get the feel of that, it's the biggest epiphany eye-opener you will ever have in golf. If you learn how to properly rotate your left side, your left arm, through impact so that you get that magnification of power. I personally think that was Hogan's secret.
Hmm. Here we go. Somebody who's found Hogan's secret.
I don't know, but
everybody claims to.
Hogan didn't even talk about it. He talked pronation and supination. He kind of came close to talking about it. But if you go read the last 30 years of golf magazines, you won't see 10 articles, if that many, written about the proper release through impact. People still think you cock the wrists and uncock the wrists, and that's really not what you do in golf swing. That is not – I mean, it's happening a little bit, but that's not the move you're trying to get. That's just a resulting move caused by centrifugal force.
What I find so interesting is that so much of what you said we may have heard before, but it's so good to be reminded of these points. And it's not like we're talking about, you know, technical mechanics. You know, you focus more on technique and just proper ways of doing things. And it's so easy to forget it once you get involved in your game. And these are so critically important. So thank you for that. And I find it absolutely fascinating that you are not, as far as I know, you're not a PGA certified instructor, yet you are a passionate golf professional who manufactures scoring clubs.
Well, and that's the thing. I write a blog, and I write twice a week and half for 5 years. I think I'm up to well over over 1,000 articles now, I think.
Please promote it, thewedgeguy.com.
It's thewedgeguy.com, and you find it on the Score Golf website. But I write twice a week, and I write – people ask me about things, or I write things just, you know, observe on the tour event or observe watching golfers play or just things that strike me, and I'm kind of all over the lot. But I'm mainly focused. But I had somebody ask me, say, well, you know, you talk about – you know, the short game all the time because you sell wedges. And actually, we don't sell wedges. We sell scoring clubs. But my answer to him was, no, I built scoring clubs because I talk about the short game all the time. And because I'm so focused on scoring, because I'm 5'7", and I was in high school, I was 120 pounds, and I was not going to hit it with the big guys. And I was going to – my dad was 5'9". And little guy, and he was the best amateur golfer in our town. And, you know, he was hitting 7 irons in the greens when all the big hitters were hitting wedges, and he was just killing them because between that and his old putter called Mandrake, he made pars and birdies because he didn't hit it in trouble. And I learned that if you're going to score, you're going to have to do it with your short clubs, because I'm not going to be chipping on par fives. I'm going to be hitting, you know, full swing wedges and 9 irons on par fives on my third shot. And I'm not going to be – and I learned how to strike the ball solid, and I learned how to get it up and down, because that's the way I was going to compete with guys that could hit it 20, 30, 40 yards past me. I still play with guys that can hit it, you know, because most of the guys I play with are, you know, young guys from their 30s to 40s, and they're big guys. And, you know, we get out there, and I'm respectfully long for my size, but I'm not a long hitter like some of these guys. Well, you know, if I've got a guy and I'm playing a par five and this guy's going to be hitting 4 iron – to that green on his second shot, and I know I'm going to be hitting 6 iron to lay up to wedge range, then, you know, I better be really good with that scoring club. I better be really good from 82 yards and 78 yards and 105 yards, and I am. And it's about technique, and it's about learned skills. And you do not – I think one of the things that's great is just to be – you know, always have a ball up on the green when that long hitter gets to his shot. And he's got that wedge in hand. He goes, this guy's just killing me with these 6 and 7 and 5 irons into the green. He's 20 and 25 feet, 15 feet all day long. And you'll kill that guy because, you know, he's always looking at a ball on the green. And, you know, whether you're playing – and most club golf and amateur golf, most of us play match play golf. And we keep our scores for handicap, but we play match play. But you can learn – good solid technique that will keep your short irons and your approach shots and your scoring club shots, you know, around the hole and around the green, keep you out of trouble, learn how to chip, you know, and practice your putting, and you're a match for anybody. I don't care how far they hit it. I mean, Luke Donald, I've used him as a perfect example. You know, I mean, Zach Johnson, I wrote a blog post about Zach Johnson when he won the Masters in, what was that, 2007 or 8? And Zach Johnson, short, not a long hitter, went into Augusta with the game plan of he was not going to go for any par 5 and 2. And if you go back and you'll read that in the archives. But he made a decision going in. He practiced his wedge play, and he made a decision he was not going to go for a par 5 and 2. And everybody bombing it at the par 5s and 2 is one of the fun things about Augusta, right?
Yeah.
One of the fun things we like watching the Masters. He scored the par 5s better than anybody in the field that week. Better than anybody. Never hit even tried to go for 1-2. Never left himself even a chip shot or a short pitch. He left himself good full swing, lob wedges and sand wedges into those greens, and he dialed it in, and he played the 16 par fives, 14 under or 13 under.
Well, I'll tell you, when I play par fives, I rarely ever go for it in two because I can't reach. So what I try to do is, you know, I look at my GPS and say, okay, I need to get to 125 yards to the pin, you know, which is my 42 degree score golf, you know, 41, 61, my 42 degree. And that to me, it's like, it just makes me more confident. If I know that I can get to that spot on my second shot to put it in position to get close to the hole. Because to me, again, it's all about turning three shots into two, right?
Right. And I mean, if you will go and, you know, the whole premise behind the score 41-61 is to have the entire short end of your set all be alike. And you don't have a nine and a pitch that look like a six iron and then a sand and a right. gap and a lob that might even not look alike. And the gaps are all off and the clubs are designed totally different. They launch the ball differently. The shafts are totally different. You know, what the whole concept behind score 41-61 is you have this synchronized set of scoring tools that are 4-degree gaps or 3-degree gaps or 5-degree gaps, whatever's right for you. But that you know inside, you know, that first scoring club, in your case, it's your 42. With me, I believe it or not, I actually have some that are a little tweaked, and I have a 41 that I reground the bottom, and I tweaked it down to 39. So I carry six scoring clubs at 39, 43, 47, 51, 55, and 58. And I know that inside that 41-degree golf club, with that 41, which is really 39, that's my 138 club. Mm-hmm. And at a normal full swing, it's 138. And that I know from 138 all the way down to 70 that I can take a metered full swing with my hands in a certain position on the grip, and I feel like – and I'm an amateur player, guys. I mean, I'm a 2-3 handicapper and at best, and because I don't get to play as much, and I'm older than I used to be. But I know – at least I feel like I know inside 138, I can, and even further out, even all out in the 6-iron range, my game is all about, I know how to hit it that far, however far that is. And if I lay up and this is 103, I've got a 105 shot. That's only 6 feet behind the hole. That'll work. If I hit it to 97, I got a 95 shot. That's only 6 feet short of the hole, and that'll work. And I know in my head, in my heart, I believe that I can dial it in to 2 to 3 yard increments anywhere from 70 all the way out to 150, 155. Mm. And then I let the increments get bigger because, I mean, as I mentioned last week, 30 feet long or short with that 5-iron is a great shot. I mean, sure, I love to, you know, swing those 5-irons from 170, 172 and knock them in 2 feet. And I do it occasionally, but I'm not expecting that. 30 right. feet long or short from 175, you know, I'll take it all day long, and so would every tour player.
How does all this information that you have in your head about technique and that you're helping us with, how does that translate into the design of clubs?
Well, the way it translated, I mentioned a while ago, I'm such a stickler for the short game, and I backed away about 3 years ago, and I've designed wedges, I've designed drivers, I've designed irons, I've designed over 100 putters, but you know the I watch golfers struggle with their scoring clubs, and what I watch golfers happen is they can't keep the ball trajectory out of the clouds. You know, good players can hit those driving 9-iron and wedge shots, and they know how, and they have a good knee action and everything. But they're fighting the golf club. If you think about the design of a wedge, and I talked about Hogan last week, wedges haven't changed in the way they look in 50, 60 years. They have all the weight along the sole of the golf club. Hogan said that a maximum sand wedge was 40 yards. That's because he knew with all of that weight low, that's what made it a good bunker club and a good club for pitching the ball. But that made it a horrible full swing golf club because, you know, it loads the shaft too much. It's going to launch the ball higher. If you think about it, we put the weight low in our 5 and 6 iron cavity backs, so the ball will go up in the air. Well, when I get to that 9 and pitch, I've got 42, 45 degrees loft. It's going in the air. I don't need all the weight low. What I know works, and it's indisputable, a thicker face makes the ball go more consistently on the same path and the same distance. a higher center of gravity makes the ball drive off the club lower. So, you know, people talk about, you know, a low launch driver. Well, they get the weight up higher than that driver. Well, you know, you don't really need a low launch driver. We're trying to get the ball in the air. But I want that 9 and pitch and gap and sand, the 51, the 53, whatever you carry out there. I want those balls to fly on a consistent trajectory, because the only way you know how far the ball is going is if it leaves the club the same way every time. Hogan was a big stickler for that. If you don't know the trajectory the ball's going to leave on, then you really don't know how far it's going to go. And I would tell your listeners, every one of you has hit that shot, and it's like, ooh, I'm going to have to get on this gap wedge a little bit. So you swing a little extra hard at that gap wedge. The ball goes higher, and it comes up on the front of the green. You're going, God, I thought I caught that really solid. Well, you did, but the increased club head speed with that low center of gravity makes the ball go higher, not further. And if you want to hit that club further, actually come back off of it a little bit, keep their trajectory down, and the ball is expending more energy going forward than it is going upward. I mean, if you have ball speed of 100 miles an hour off the golf club, okay, if that ball is going straight up, it's not going to go as far as if it's going out at a 30-degree angle. I mean, it's got 100-mile-an-hour ball speed, but where is the speed going? It's going up, not out. And so, you know, if you want to get really consistent with your short clubs, you have to have better trajectories, and yet we're dealing with clubs that are given to us that have all the weight low, which makes it go too high. They have a real stiff shaft that we can't load that gives us no feel. The club is not designed for what we're trying to do. And I said, you know, why the hell is that? Why have we been sitting here looking at the exact same wedge designs for 50 years? When drivers and irons and tees and shoes and balls and fairways and hybrids don't look anything like they did 50 years ago. But, I mean, and I'll use a brand name, Cleveland Golf, the number one wedge company out there they talk about. Their big deal for 2012 was the 588 Forged. That was the fifth wedge Roger Cleveland designed. It was introduced in 1988. And all you're going to do is forge that club, and you're going to tell me this is new? I mean, Cleveland's, I hear, is not doing well. I don't want to pick on them. Their lawyers are probably all calling me for saying this. But the fact is,
it's all right. It's a members-only show. I don't think their lawyers
TaylorMade and Callaway and anybody in golf could not get away with bringing a new driver to market saying this is a replica of what we made in 1988. They'd be laughed out of the golf shop.
Right.
But why is it a good thing to recreate a wedge from 1988? Really, 24-year-old design technology is the best you can do for my short game? That angered me, and I said, you know, we can do better. I mean, I started this 3 years ago, but, you know, if you treat your scoring clubs, I mean, here's the other thing. I'm on a roll, sorry.
No, that's all right.
You got a 9 and a pitch that were designed to look like a 6 iron, and they got the stiffest shaft in the set, and these are your feel irons. That didn't make any sense. Then you take a break, and you go to this wedge, your first wedge, which was picked out because you've always played a 52, 56, 60, so you have one. Well, when you got that, you were playing a 48-degree pitching wedge. Your new pee club has got 45 degrees. So you got a big, massive gap there, and you got a Cleveland gap wedge and a Boakey sand wedge and a Callaway lob wedge somebody gave you. You got this total mishmash right in the middle of money range. Why? Why would you go buy a sand wedge? You don't go buy a 7 iron. Why would you buy a mismatch and a mishmash of golf clubs to try to dissect the golf course? Why wouldn't you want a...
Because their advertising is so good. Terry, come on.
Well, because that's the way we've always done it, and nobody's telling you different, but I am. But guys, I'll tell you, you know, if you spend as much time and attention on the scoring clubs and picking out the right ones and trying them and testing them and getting the shafts right as you do with the driver, and you can buy a set of 2 or 3 scoring clubs for what you pay for one driver. And, you know, I'm just saying, move your money to where the action is. And, you know, they don't call the 4-iron the money club, but the wedges and putters are your money clubs. And I think wedges are old hat. I mean, hybrids are new hat. Nobody wants a 2-iron or a 3-iron in their bag anymore. Even the nope. tour player rarely carry them, because this thing called a hybrid is just stupid easy to hit, because it was designed to optimize ball flight off of a 18, 20, 24-degree golf club. That's what hybrids came from. They didn't say, if this works that good on here, why don't we make a driver look like a hybrid? No, we know this big 460cc thing with a deep face, that works better at 9 and 10, 11 degrees loft. And then this other club called a fairway metal, it works better when lofts get into the 13 to 17, 18 degree range. And then this thing called a hybrid, it works better when lofts are, you know, 18, 19 up to about 24 degrees, maybe even 25 or 6 for some players who have trouble getting the ball airborne. And then this thing called a cavity back, iron design, it works better from the mid-20s to the mid-30s or high 30-degree loft. But this thing called wedges does not work that well in a high loft golf club because we use wedges as full swing clubs now. They weren't used that way when they were invented, and yet we changed the way we use them, and we didn't change the way they were built. Look at putters. Okay, putters were always little blades that were pretty light because we were putting on greens that were slow and bumpy, and you had to wrap the golf ball and used a wristy stroke. But as greens became faster, the technique became more of an arms and shoulders technique, and we moved the shaft to the center of the putter, the ping answer, more copies of that, and probably every golfer on the planet has had a ping answer or look-alike. And then we found this thing called face balancing with the Zebra and some of these, the center shaft that came out. Now you look at the most common putters out there, these big branding iron-looking things, because greens are still faster, putting strokes are still more arms and shoulders driven, and so the equipment is adapting. And yet these things called wedges are the same exact things we've been carrying for 40, 50 years. It's absurd. It's just in a technologically driven industry, I think it's absurd.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. I'm getting a little on my soapbox.
Well, listen, we're going to start wrapping this up, but I do want to give you your fair shake on answering this question, and because you kind of brought it up, but with your clubs, how do we know which one is right for us? And do we get to try that? I mean, what's the deal with you guys?
Okay, so we're offering a very interesting thing. We make 21 golf clubs from 41 to 61 degrees, make every single loft. And the reason we did that is because all your listeners out there have, some of them have 9-iron and peak clubs with 40 and 45 degrees or 40 and 44 or 39 and 43 or 43 and 47. So there are no standards in our industry, so that club with a P on the bottom can be anything. We created a process called ScoreFit. It's a little exercise you go through on our website. You load your irons in the database, and it comes out with your prescription of lofts of what's going to give you consistent distance gapping based on the irons you play. Mm-hmm. And my contention is if your 5 through 8 iron are probably fine. You know, I mean, unless you just hate those irons and they're pretty new, they're probably fine. What you're trying for is you're trying to get the ball closer to the hole. And so what we do is we blend the right lofts to mesh into those middle irons. We put the right shaft in there to give you what I call a seamless transition in weight and flex so that you have a similar feel throughout your set. And then, but our shafts are designed specifically for the scoring end of the set. You can go through our score fit process. It's a lot of fun. You can call and talk to us. We have some great short game specialists that can counsel you right through what ought to happen, how you ought to be carrying it. And we're not trying to sell more clubs than you need. I mean, if you've got a short hitter, he can probably get away with 5-degree gaps. 4-degree gaps work for most people. The key is to have those gaps consistent so that, and then what we did is we built the, in our 21 degree range of lofts, there are 7 distinctly different head designs. So the head actually morphs a little bit, if you will, as lofts increase or decrease so that the weight management is optimized for that narrow 3-degree range of lofts. So the head design that's on the 41, 2, and 3 is a little different than the one that's on the 44, 5, and 6. And that's a little different than the 47, 8, and 9. And it morphs as it goes up to the high loft club so that we actually dissected those and created 7 head designs to optimize ball flight with each club in the set rather than say they all have to look alike.
And so if I order one of these clubs from you just to try it out as opposed to doing a full set and it doesn't work for me, I don't like it, what's my next step?
Well, we have 2 things. We have a free trial program. We'll build one of your set, send it out to you for 30 days and let you hit it, let you see the feel, the performance, and then we can fill in the rest of your set. If you don't like it, you send it back. Or you can say, you know, I know I'm going to like these, and we can build, you know, a set of 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 for you. And if you don't like them, you can send them back, and we'll go buy you anything else in the market you think you'd like better.
Wow. And if you're a Golf Smarter member, that's who's listening right now, you get 15% off when you go to their website. And just click on the Score Golf banner at the bottom of golfsmarter.com. Or just make sure that when you check out or if you're talking to somebody on the phone, you tell them Golf Smarter 15 and you're going to get a 15% discount because you're a Golf Smarter member. So, well, listen, Terry, what's really exciting is you're coming back for the next episode.
Yeah, we're going to be here for a while.
Right. We're going to launch our Short Game Academy. So I want to remind everybody again, clearly Terry knows more about our golf game than we do. And he has opinions on every question that's answered. And what's wrong with that? He could be right. Wrong. Listen, as we say about a friend of mine, always sure, sometimes right.
There you go. Well, my thing is I'll always give you something to think about and try.
Right, exactly.
And, I mean, my goal is to help golfers play better golf. And I think that, you know, what we're doing with our equipment company is that we're a small company. We have no delusions of becoming a giant. You know, we can build sets of clubs for, you know, a few thousand golfers a year, and that's the way we do it. Our whole procedure is modeled off of the old tour room at Hogan when I was there, and we build clubs one set at a time. We do not have stock golf clubs. Every order we do is a custom order.
Wow.
Even if you want standard length, standard lie, standard loft, standard grip, you're going to still get it built custom right next to the guy that wanted, you know, a half inch long, 2 degrees flat, and two wraps under the grip. They're all built custom. That's the way I think golf clubs ought to be built. We take great pride in what we do. We have some great craftsmen in there building them. And
I like the product.
So, you know, it's a passion. It's a love of mine. We have no delusions of slaying any giants. But what we do have, great dreams of helping people build better golf games. And we get emails and phone calls every day that we're doing that. And that's the gratifying thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I beg the audience to take advantage of the opportunity of possibly getting one of these for free. Here's all you need to do. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Short Game Academy button on the bottom of the page and submit a question for Terry. If you have any question, and it doesn't have to be about your short game. It doesn't have to be about your clubs. It can be either or anything you want. And if Terry answers the question on our Short Game Academy, which begins in the next episode, you will receive two things. One, you're going to get a wedge customized for you, because we'll let you talk to the folks over at Score Golf, and they'll customize a wedge for you to try out. And you'll also receive one of the Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Repair Tools. And that's because you're going to be hitting more greens and leaving more marks, so you have to clean them up. So I think it's a great combination. I'm very excited to do that. But go ahead and submit those questions. Terry will answer them, and hopefully we'll answer yours on the show. And, Terry, we'll talk to you on the next episode. Thanks again for – this is awesome. I've got 3 pages of notes. It's amazing. And because there's things I have friends I have to go – you know what? You have to listen to this episode because he's talking to you specifically. It's really interesting.
Okay.
So much of that is so valuable. But he's not – you're not given lessons, but you're reminding us of things that we constantly forget.
Right.
So thanks, bud.
Well, thank you. I look forward to the next episode and starting to answer reader questions or listener questions, and hopefully we can help improve some short games out there.
I think you'll be able to do that, and I hope that you check your email, because as a Golf Smarter member, I just sent you an email days ago, or depending on when you look at it, but I did send you an email telling you about the opportunity for Score Golf, and get your questions in. Terry will answer them either by email, or if you're lucky enough, he's going to choose it, answer it on the show, and you will get a Score 4161 wedge, which will change your short game and your confidence level. Love my club. Okay, so this is kind of crazy, but I've got another interesting story about being a customer at Bonobos.com. I ordered my second pair of long pants, this time the Caddy Slacks. I just love that name. And even though they fit fine, my wife wanted to see how the neck size down would look on me. Oh, isn't that a blessing? Yeah, get them smaller, she says. Well, because Bonobos offers free shipping and absolutely no hassle return policy, I wrote to ninjas@bonobos.com to request an alternative, and it was done. No questions asked. And they were very happy to help. Whether you're the styling type or not, and I definitely fit in the category of not, doesn't matter, because when you wear a comfortable pair of golf pants or shorts designed by Bonobos, you're going to look great. Did I mention free shipping and no hassle return that also includes shipping? And as I mentioned last time, because of a proprietary curved waistband, their pants don't bunch up at the waist, which means your shirt won't continue to slip out and make you look like a slob when you're playing golf. Check them out. You'll see for yourself how great they are. And if they don't fit the way you want, send them back, and Bonobos will pay for the return shipping. They are so excited to be a partner of Golf Smarter and have a special offer for all the Golf Smarter listeners. If you have never shopped at Bonobos.com before, click on their ad at GolfSmarter.com and get 20% off your entire order when you use the checkout code GolfSmarter. I've already thanked them for supporting Golf Smarter, so I really would appreciate if you would too. Bonobos.com, spelled B-O-N-O-B-O-S, or click on their ad at golfsmarter.com and buy Bonobos.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.